Blog Talk Radio.
It's 2019 and you're listening to Totally Driven Radio.
You're so damn huggable.
I love you.
This is not a test. This is your emergency broadcast system announcing the commencement of the annual purge sanctioned by the U.S. government.
11:55. Almost midnight. Enough time for one more story before 12.
You're gonna die up there.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Michael Joy, and tonight's podcast, In the Blink of an Eye. Our special guest tonight, Eric Christopher Myers and K. Patrick Glover, and we're going to be talking about the urban legend of the Blink Man. Going to talk a little about the movie behind the legend, Butterfly Kisses. And then we're going to be talking about the book behind the movie, In the Blink of an Eye. So without further ado, let me bring on board our two very special guests, Eric and K. Patrick. How are you guys doing today?
Wait, who talks first?
I'm doing good.
You talk first, I talk first. Who talks first?
Hey, Eric. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm Eric. How's it going? I'm the director of the movie.
Doing pretty good. So we're basically talking about this urban legend of the Blink Man, and I guess how it all started. Now, as earlier today, I was taking a look at exactly what a definition of an urban legend is: a modern story of obscure origin and with little or no supporting evidence that spreads spontaneously in varying forms and often has elements of humor, moralizing, or horror. And now the Blink Man, this was something created by you, or was this something out there before?
I think you hit the nail on the head when you said little to no supporting evidence, because this was completely fabricated for the film. The movie is sort of posing as a documentary about somebody that has allegedly found footage. You know, this study that I am performing as a filmmaker, I am following a person who has discovered discarded videotapes that show essentially the Blair Witch Project for real. So the Butterfly Kisses movie is kind of telescoping outwards, and you know, we're seeing found footage, and then we are seeing a documentary or a fake documentary that is analyzing said found footage, and on the outer side you are seeing the filmmakers who are making the documentary about the found footage. If you've not seen this movie, I recommend you just take off your headphones and you stop talk right now, hit the pause button, and go watch Butterfly Kisses, because otherwise nothing we're going to talk about is going to make any sense. So moving forwards, assuming that you've now watched the film, the environment
which is
in
available
which,
on
like
Amazon Prime.
Did I just hear somebody talking about a ghost, somebody talking about Amazon Prime?
Could be.
I don't know. That
so,
was
yeah, we're
kind of creepy.
We're going to be getting into talking a little bit about the movie, but I want to switch it over and just introduce K. Patrick right now. You're on board with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, guys.
Hey, how you doing?
Hello.
Now, where in this urban legend puzzle of the Blink Man do you fit in? Let's talk a little bit about that. Where do you come into play, and where does In the Blink of an Eye fit into this craziness?
Well, I met Eric late last year at a signing in a comic book store, and I picked up a copy of this movie from him then, took it home, loved it, thought it was amazing, and not too long after that, I pitched him the idea of a horror anthology that would cover some of the backstory of the Blank Man.
All right, that's pretty cool. So, talking about the Blank Man, this person or thing or entity, it can also be called Peeping Tom. Am I correct about that?
That is correct. The whole concept.
All right, so
is... Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say the whole concept was taking a real environment, which is the city of Ellicott City, where the film takes place, which is reputedly haunted by ghosts in every storefront, every bar, and every hotel. And to take a real place that has a rich culture of paranormal activity and to make a fake documentary about a real place in Ellicott City that does not have a specific ghost story, and to create a ghost story around it so that it sort of fits into the real folklore in a meta sort of way.
Well, I think it's pretty fantastic that here we are in the year 2019, and you know, you have a movie, and now you have a book about this myth, this newly created myth. And I mean, like, you know, you go back in you know, history and different urban legends. I mean, you know, people talk about, you know, Bigfoot, and people talk about you know, the Loch Ness Monster, and people talk about, you know, various ghost stories and all these different things. And the origin of these things sometimes, you know, are, you know, 50 years, 100 years or more, you know. And now here we have, you know, this brand new urban legend popping up. And the great thing that I find is that it's so believable that the fact is people don't know if it was just made up or if it's being taken from, you know, news articles or, you know, passed down from generation to generation, you know, and you're grabbing it and making it into a story. The believability factor is there.
Well, that, you know, there's a couple of reasons for that. And the very first reason is taking, as somebody myself who is very much into urban legends and folklore and, you know, Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster and everything you just cited, and creating a story that was kind of a mashup of all of these things that we've heard before. So it's, you know, the story of Blank Man or Peeping Tom, which, as you stated before, he has different names based on what generation you are a part of, what era in which you heard this story during a slumber party. So he has different names, you know, reflecting different eras, and he has components of all of these different stories. So in some senses, he's very much like Bloody Mary, where you go into the bathroom, you have to conjure him up a very specific way. In other ways, he's kind of like Slender Man. And you take all of these things, you mash them together, and immediately, whether you live in Ellicott City, Maryland, or you live somewhere in Nevada, regardless, you're going to say that has a familiarity and I can associate with that the same way that I can associate with other ghost stories like The Vanishing Hitchhiker or whatever else. And then the other side of that was to, you know, really try to dig into very specific horror movie tropes and, you know, make it something that when you watch the film, it gave you a sense that this movie was in some ways reminding you of something like the Blair Witch Project, but in other ways was almost like a satire. And, you know,
right.
I specifically went out of my way the next level and say, you know, in order to give this a meta sort of quality, what I'm going to do is I'm not just going to put the movie out there prior to the movie being released. In fact, prior to the movie even being finished, I went online and under a various assortment of pseudonyms, I began writing articles about the history of the old Chester Tunnel, in, you know, in which this film takes place, this specific railroad tunnel in, you know, that Blink Man or Peeping Tom inhabits, that you have to conjure him from. And so I began writing these stories, whether it was just, you know, folklore studies or, you know, I knew a guy who went to Old Chester Tunnel, performed the Blink Man staring contest that conjured this being up. I began seeding these things in various places on the internet. And not only did they pre-exist to the release of the film, but it inspired other writers or paranormal investigators even to begin studying or doing their own writings or YouTube videos on the subject of.
No, I mean, that's pretty amazing that it had that kind of impact. Now, before you, you know, started work on the movie, after putting these articles out there, were you, I don't know if you left any kind of contact information or if people just did some research to try to contact the person who wrote that article. Did you get anyone reaching out to you?
No, because I very specifically made sure that Eric Christopher Myers was not in any way associated with anything relating to these articles. It was very important not to do that. In a lot of ways,
gotcha.
This was sort of a sociological study for me. And anybody that is into the subject of undiscovered monsters or cryptozoology will know that there have been various pieces of, and I said with finger quotes, lost footage or lost photographs within the past that people have, you know, via oral tradition talked about having seen, which incites other people to have the false memory syndrome that they believe they have seen them as well. So, for example, there was the Native American creature, the Thunderbird, which was a gigantic, huge bird, larger than an airplane. And there were all sorts of reports, the same way that people have seen UFOs or other monster or strange phenomenon. And there was a story that went around, and it continues to circulate, that there was a Thunderbird that was shot down out of the sky, and a photograph was taken sometime in the late 1900s, and that this photograph has now been lost, and yet it was published in a book that was in libraries, and people were able to see, and then that book has vanished. Nobody remembers the title, nobody remembers, you know, what time period, what it looked like, but they remember that photograph. And by talking about that photograph, other people seem to remember that they saw that book in the library when they were kids, and they remember that photograph. I was playing with false memory syndrome here, and so it became very important that I left no trail as to who I am and simply to put the urban legend out there.
Well, I mean, I want to ask you, I mean, in doing your research about, you know, and you mentioned a few of them. Now, my neck of the woods, I'm over in New Jersey. So, the big one for me would be the legend of the New Jersey Devil. That's always been something right in my backyard. And, I mean, there's been so many books and movies and everything else written about that. So, I mean, that's a favor coming from my side of things. Now, you know, whether it be, you know, doing your research or just, you know, from, you know, when you were a kid, is there a certain mythological creature or urban legend that was a favorite of yours that, you know, kind of maybe even stirred you in this direction a little bit?
Well, being here in Maryland, I mean, obviously Goatman was the big thing. And if anyone hasn't ever heard of Goatman, apparently if you are in the Prince George's County area and you go out with your date and you stop on Lover's Lane and whatever Lover's Lane might be for you here in this particular area, and you're making out with your significant other, there is the possibility that your car will be attacked by a man who is half man, half goat. And he comes at you with an axe, so you better drive away as quickly as you possibly can. Goatman is the big thing out here. And beyond that, I mean, you've got other things related to, you know, the ghost of Abraham Lincoln in the White House. There's the story of the demon cat who inhabits the Capitol as well. And if you happen to be one of the unlucky security guards or, you know, presidential aides who are guarding the basement after hours, you might see a kitty that begins to grow in size and attacks you. There's, you know, of course, the true story of The Exorcist, which in the film takes place in Georgetown, but allegedly happened in Mount Rainier and actually happened in Cottage City and probably involved a child with mental and emotional issues rather than demonic possession. This whole area, like I said, I mean, it's a hotbed in terms of folklore. And so I specifically made sure the Butterfly Kisses took place in Ellicott City, where, again, as I said, it's a historic district that is just ghost story to ghost story to ghost story, shop to shop to building to building.
And Kay Patrick, I kind of want to throw the same question to you, you know, as far as folklore and, you know, maybe something you grew up with or kind of stirred you in the direction of really getting into this type of thing.
You know, I came at it more from a story structure point of view. I was never a big folklore guy. But looking at what Eric put together with the film and the deliberate tying it to actual history in Ellicott City left so many obvious gaps for storytelling. He built the framework for this book in that film without realizing he was doing it, I think.
You know, I used to watch, and I don't know if you guys remember this, In Search Of was Leonard Nimoy back in the 1970s. I used to love that show. And, you know, if the Blink Man was around then, I can so envision right now Leonard Nimoy, you know, hosting the show and starting to talk about, you know, Peeping Tom and, you know, all this stuff. So, I mean, that's, you know, and hopefully, you know, in years to come, this will be integrated so much that perhaps a reboot of In Search Of will come out and they will be talking about the Blink Man.
Well, first of all, I think a reboot of In Search Of actually in the works. And beyond that, I'm a huge fan of that show growing up. You know, I caught it in reruns. But nonetheless, it was, you know, it was everything that I was already into. In fact, I'm sitting here, and to my right, I have a bookshelf that is filled with nothing but books on the Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot, and all sorts of, you know, cryptozoological and paranormal topics. And one of them is the actual hardcover tie-in with In Search Of that covered all the, you know, the sort of main components of that show. But regardless, I mean, you know, that was a gigantic influence. And there was a wonderful time, particularly during the 1970s, where speculative topics were very mainstream. And we are now in an age of skepticism where, thanks to, you know, various technological advancements, we're able to say, okay, well, you know, studying this particular film that was made of Bigfoot or of this UFO or whatever else, we're able to rule out X, Y, and Z. We have drones now. We're able to search every inch of the earth. There is no sight or sound of X creature or Y, whatever. And it's kind of sad in a lot of ways. And that's from somebody who grew up a hardcore believer and is now at 43, very much a skeptic. You know, I'm a skeptic, but I'm kind of sad that I'm a skeptic because a lot of mystery has gone out of our world. I loved shows like that. And I love and will always love books on these subjects. And that, you know, it surprises certain people in certain circles that I inhabit, particularly online, where I am a very vocal skeptic and have made a lot of enemies in the pro-monster camp, to say that I love these subjects, I love them, and that Butterfly Kisses is, in a lot of ways, a love letter to, you know, the belief in an ongoing quest to prove the validity of fringe creatures, monsters, subjects, whatever that might be. In fact, the movie even ends with a, you know, without spoiling everything, you know, with a question mark. Is it possible that everything you've just seen is real? And in a lot of ways, it's up to you to decide.
Or could I say, you know, are you actually putting us on right now? And maybe the Blink Man is real.
Exactly.
Maybe it is
everything
something
I'm saying. This is when we start going into, you know, the lone gunman territory, and everything you're hearing is an FBI cover up.
Exactly. And, you know, hey, I grew up the same time period, you know, and I mentioned In Search Of, you know, but I mean, you know, you go into, like, you know, films like or TV series of, like, The X-Files and, you know, different UFO documentaries and, you know, all that type of thing. I mean, you know, I'm with you. You know, I grew up watching that stuff, and just, like, you know, some of the scariest stuff for me wasn't, like, things found in horror movies, but it was, like, those subject matters found in, like, you know, documentaries and supposed, like, real life events that had happened. You know, that's the kind of stuff that gave me chills, you know. So, you know, your love letter to the this whole genre, you know, Butterfly Kisses, it's fabulous that you put so much effort in, you know, to this movie, and, you know, not even just the movie, but beforehand, and now the book, In the Blink of an Eye, is going to be coming out. And again, it even enhances, you know, everything that we're talking about, because there are more stories out there, and there are more stories, you know, that are going to be told in the book. And Kay Patrick, so let me just throw that over to you really quick. And I just want to, how many stories are in the book for those who are just hearing this for the first time?
We've got 12 stories by 12 separate writers, including myself and Eric. Each story takes place in a different time period, starting in 1903, when the old Chester Tunnel was constructed. And the book is maintaining the conceit of the film. Each story will have a little introduction telling about how it was found. And it's going to be presented entirely as real in the same as it was done in the film.
All right, fantastic. And how long did it take you to, you know, put this all together?
It's coming up pretty fast. I think we pitched up Eric in January or February.
Something like that.
And we got the first drafts and stories all in March, and final drafts on most of the stories are in, and we'll be in print in August.
All right, fantastic. Now, and these stories basically circle around different time periods, again, of sightings of Peeping Tom and Blink Man and that type of thing?
Yes. Yeah, all of them get back to Peeping Tom in one way or another. The first story in the book, written by Shelley Davis Wygant, who's the author of Haunted Ellicott City, is a possible origin time, but not meant to be taken as a definitive one. And there will be kind of references or continuity links from story to story to give each one of them a little bit more added verisimilitude.
Okay. Now, there is a Kickstarter campaign to support this effort. We'll circle back around and mention it again, but what is the place where someone can go to support this?
Okay, if you search for In the Blink of an Eye on Kickstarter, it'll get you there, but the actual URL, you go through www.kickstarter.com and then projects/Loxton Press, which is our company, / In the Blink of an Eye, Take 2, with dashes between each word.
Okay. And again, we'll circle on, we'll mention that again, you know, both, you know, on the podcast and in print as well. But let me circle back around to some of the stuff we were talking about, and more specifically, you know, the fact that the person or the entity that we're talking about is known by two different names. We've been saying the Blink Man a lot, but I want to talk a little about Peeping Tom, because to me that's a curious name, because when I think of Peeping Tom, you know, I think of, you know, some, you know, perverted old guy, you know, looking in a window is trying to catch a peep at a girl taking a shower or something like that. So What was the thought process about using the name Peeping Tom?
It's interesting because I think that Blank Man was the name that I originally put in the script. And as I was writing it, and I wrote the script in something like a week. I mean, it was really super fast. But I seem to recall that I was talking to the cinematographer, Kenny Johnson, you know, halfway through the writing process and said something to the effect of, and then the entity, and his name is Blink Man. And I kind of stopped myself and said, don't worry, I'll come up with something better than that. And went back to what I was talking about. And, you know, my wheels were turning and I was going, Blink Man, I like it, but at the same time, he kind of sounds like a superhero. He needs to have a more definitive name. And then I kind of stopped myself as I was trying to slide other names into the script. And I went, well, you know, does he have to have one name? Could he not have, you know, a whole lineage of titles based on whether it was the 1930s or the 1940s? If this is a story that children are telling on the playground, would he not sort of have different monikers from generation to generation? So Peeping Tom came from the fact that, you know, I was coming up with all these various monikers. So, you know, there was Blink Man and there was, you know, Old Blinky and things along those lines, the Tunnel Guy. And I think Peeping Tom came from the fact that, you know, it was, in a way, it was kind of a perverse joke. Instead of a creepy guy who's looking at you, you have to stand at the end of this tunnel at, you know, midnight. And for one solid hour between midnight and 1 a.m., you have to stare down the length of the tunnel without blinking once in order to conjure him into your field of view. And then ever after, every time you blink, he gets one step closer and one step closer and one step closer until he's right in your face, and then he literally scares you to death. I thought it was kind of perverse to say, would that not be funny to take the concept of Peeping Tom, apply it to you as the willing victim? You must stare into his window in order to conjure him up, and then once you see him, no matter what you do, no matter where you look, no matter what you try to do to escape him, he is perpetually and eternally staring at you as he gets one step closer and one step closer and kills you. It to me just seemed like, you know, taking an old idea and putting a spin on it.
Well, whether it be the Blinking Man or Peeping Tom, I mean, the entity behind it, definitely a scary vision of an urban legend or mythology, without a doubt. And I just want to remind everyone right now that we're on Blog Talk Radio, and we're coming into you by Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network, and it's available on iTunes and Stitcher and a variety of other places. And because we are, gracious host of Totally Driven Radio, hosting this for us, you know, we're going to give them a commercial break so they can have some spots. We'll be back in approximately 4 minutes, and we're going to be talking a little bit more about Butterfly Kisses and In the Blink of an Eye. So bear with me, guys. We're just going to take a quick commercial break.
Hey, everybody. This is Bay Ragney of Totally Driven Radio, and I'm here to let you know about a person you might know as one of Philly's cheesesteak kings or the TV personality, but I'm letting you know about a good friend of the show's and mine, Mr. Tony Luke Jr. He recently released his own song rendition of the Bob Dylan classic, Make You Feel My Love, which is now available on Apple Music, Spotify, and iTunes. He recorded the song for all individuals who are struggling with addiction and their families. 100% of all the proceeds that are made from this recording is going directly to fund the Brown and White Initiative. Hashtag Brown and White. To end the stigma associated with addiction. Hashtag end the stigma. Hashtag love the addict. Hashtag you are loved. Hashtag you need something.
When the rain is blowing in your face and the whole world is on your case, I can offer you a warm embrace to make you feel my love.
five black men, saving mankind, one stereotype at a time.
To the black mobile. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard. Pronto.
Will black man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
All right, this is Michael Joy, and we're back talking about In the Blink of an Eye and Butterfly Kisses, the movie that started everything. And now it's now we're getting talking a little bit about the book that's coming out with 12 stories about the Blink Man and Peeping Tom. So, again, we've talked so much about this already. And I'd like to dive just a little bit into, Eric, when you were making the film, and how long, I guess first question I have is how long did it take you to actually shoot this?
It took the better part of 2015 because we had to make essentially two movies. We had to make the found footage that allegedly takes place 2004, and we had to make the documentary that was wrapped around that footage that was dissecting, analyzing the footage. So the fake, okay, so it's all fake, but the found footage was shot between January and April of 2015, and then we cut that footage together, edited it, and, you know, more or less finished it, and shot the fake documentary that was analyzing the fake documentary. And I say fake documentary because it was filled with real people playing themselves between June and August of 2015. So close to 9 months.
Okay. Now, from when you actually put everything on paper, you know, wrote the script and, you know, wrote all these ideas down, to, you know, when you know, he actually filmed it and everything was said and done. Now, talking to a lot of independent filmmakers, a lot of times what you have on paper and what you have on film kind of ends up being something completely different. Did the finished product change in any way from your original vision that you had down on paper, or did it pretty much stay the same?
I'd say yes and no, because the entire format is supposed to be, you know, faux documentary. It means that everything that I'm shooting at a given time, you know, it's scripted, and yet I am trying to capture believable reality. And so I'm trying to encourage the actors, or in some cases, real people playing themselves, to, you know, go off book, to, you know, go off on tangents, to bring themselves and the reality of the moment into play. So if the general, you know, the general knowledge that you have of what each page of a screenplay equates to in terms of screen time, you know, what we're typically told is that one page equals 1 minute of finished film. The screenplay for Butterfly Kisses was, I think, 89 or 90 pages. And the film that I ended up with, that I first assembled, was just under 3 hours. And, you know, that was a combination of shooting what was on the page, but also allowing the actors to have the latitude to play with the moment, to have a certain elasticity with reality. And as a consequence, I had too much footage. I had too much great content and had to get it down to that original projection of 90 minutes for runtime. So what you have in the finished version is very close to what I had in my mind when I wrote it and then when I directed it. And those are two different things because, you know, you essentially write the film and then you shoot the film and then you edit the film. It's, you know, three very different drafts. It very much reflects what I had in my brain during conception, but at the same time has so many wonderful moments and attributes that are only there because filmmaking is a collaborative process. And, you know, there are many people to thank for that.
Now, you know, maybe this is the same answer, or maybe it's not, but during the making of Butterfly Kisses, what was the greatest obstacle that you had to work around? You know, what was it, the fact that you had too much footage, or was it something else?
It's the same thing that any independent filmmaker will tell you, and that is time and money. Time and money are always the problem if you're doing independent film, unless you have, and I mean real independent film. Independent film used to mean something very different 20 years ago that very much meant what it means today, except that now when people are talking about independent films, they're talking about films that play at Sundance starring Matt Damon or whatever else that were only made for, you know, $15 million. Independent film really means people who are selling their car in order to finance a production. You know, it's made for whatever loose change they can find between the cushions of their couch. Independent filmmaking means shooting overnights, shooting weekends, you know, scotch tape and popsicle sticks to get the thing done, and alienating your friends, alienating your spouse, eating up all of your free time. That's what independent filmmaking is. And, you know, now it has sort of received a new name, which is, you know, micro budget, and which is a very different thing because now we're trying to, you know, compartmentalize a concept that means the same thing, but in the eyes of the industry means something else. It's very, very frustrating. But before going down that rabbit hole, the point is, yes, you need to have benefactors with very deep pockets, or else you need to be doing this by asking your entire cast and crew to pack their own lunch, to pay for their own gas, and to schedule all of your shoot days around their availability and to make yourself as the director available for everyone else, because it becomes very much a volunteer effort. that's the hardest part of doing this, is you can't shoot a film in 20 days. You have to shoot the film in, you know, a series of months of Saturdays.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. And I've talked to many a filmmaker, and you're right. They all have very similar stories, you know, and that is a struggle right now. And, you know, the struggle is even beyond that. And it's the fact that the market is so oversaturated, you know, the struggle, a whole new struggle begins when the film is complete. And that's the struggle to actually find your audience. And, you know, to actually get people to see, you know, this piece of artwork that you created. So, I mean, that being said, do you think you have found your audience? I think you have, from everything that I've heard and different, you know, websites covering it and, you know, this and that, but I'd like to hear from you. Do you think you have found your audience, and what's the next step for you to do that?
You know, it's funny because this is my second feature, and it's been kind of crazy in that this particular film has managed to find an audience in ways that I didn't really expect. I mean, you hope that everything you're going to do is going to, you know, connect with people. And a lot of that simply has to do with the legs that your product has. That doesn't necessarily mean the quality of what you have. That might mean the engine behind it. That means who is releasing it, who is promoting it, who's making sure that audiences, and particularly audiences that are receptive of that genre, even know that it exists. With all of the filmmakers who are able to use Amazon.com as a platform, and, you know, thanks to digital, anybody and everybody can make a film now. It's so hard. It's so easy to get your work out there, but it's so hard to be able to, you know, try to jump up and down and get your head seen over all of the other heads standing in front of you. Hey, I'm here. I've got this movie. It's about this. There's so much content out there. And, my previous film, Roulette, did well for what it was. And what it was truly a micro-budget indie. I mean, it was made for an absurdly low amount of money. And it was largely done using recent film graduates or film students. And, you know, that was the only way I was able to do it. Butterfly Kisses was done with a number of professionals. And I had means and access I did not have before. So it meant a more slick and more polished end product. But it really helped that I had, you know, Marketing Macabre, who, you know, were helping to get the film, you know, noticed by various websites. It helped that I had all of the websites and all the critics who were, you know, reviewing the film or talking about the film. And that audiences were discovering it on their own and then talking about it, whether that was on Facebook or Twitter or whatever else, Reddit threads, and for it to sort of take on a life of its own, and for me to wake up and I've got, you know, X number of private messages on Facebook and on Twitter from people in Ohio and people in Nevada and people in, you know, pick a state, who are just saying, hey, I saw your movie and I loved your movie. In some ways, that's very weird because you're like, that's what I wanted. That's exactly what I wanted. That's what I expected. I made a film. I want people in these various, you know, all over the world to see this film and respond to it. But at the same time, it's kind of weird when you see it actually happening, because when you're making it, you're thinking about it on your own terms. I'm sitting here in my house, in my bedroom, in front of my computer, editing, cutting footage that I've been staring at for a year and, you know, sending it to somebody via email or Dropbox or mailing a hard drive off. You think about it in those terms. And once it gets out there, it, you know, it really takes on a life of its own.
Well, I mean, since we are talking about it being out there now, you know, why don't you move forward and just tell people where they actually can see it? What are some of the sites or platforms?
Well, it was released by Gravitas Ventures in the U.S. in October of 2018. God, what is it? It's 2019, right? Yes, it's 2019. Okay, so, and then it was released internationally, I think, a month ago. It would be in April or May. And it is available on DVD and Blu-ray. You can go to Amazon. You can go to Barnes & Noble or buy Walmart, Target, Kmart, all those various websites, or go order it in store if it's not there on the shelves. And if you have Amazon, whatever part of the world you're in, it's on there right now. I think it's streaming for free if you have Prime. Regardless, I encourage anybody and everybody to please check it out. And remember that independent filmmakers can only continue to thrive if you make sure that their films are seen, and that while the filmmakers are, as I said earlier, jumping up and down and trying to, you know, make sure they're noticed by everybody else in a sea of other filmmakers. So please rate Butterfly Kisses, whether that's on Amazon or that's on the Internet Movie Database. Please give it a review if you don't mind. Let people know it's out there, because your reviews and your ratings help push it out into the recommend section for potential viewers.
Well, I mean, that is certainly great news, because, you know, like we were talking about, I mean, you know, it is one thing, and it is a major accomplishment to actually get a film completed, but it is something even beyond that to get distribution worldwide, and to, you know, be sold not just through Amazon, but Barnes and Nobles and Walmart, because not everyone can do that. You know, there are filmmakers out there that are still dreaming to even get that far. So, I mean, that is certainly a major step in the right direction.
It's a really big deal. And, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, the digital DVD made is for, you know, North American release. And that's a big deal. And the fact that we were able to get an international release, a lot of components in that. A lot of people involved in the machinery that make up distribution deals. But, you know, it does not hurt in any way that we had so many critics giving us so many positive reviews. We had so many people watching the film, and so many people who were willing to also give good reviews and to spread the word on social media. That's huge. That's gigantic. That's what you need. There was a time, you young listeners, if you are out there right now, when there was no such thing as the World Wide Web, and people just talked to one another, and we made actual phone calls, and we wrote letters, and we put them in the mail. But anyway, time machine aside, you know, that's how the concept of art and, you know, whether we're talking about films or we're talking about novels or anything else, that's how people found out about what they needed to check out. People talk to one another. They recommended things. So, you know, we might have these incredible social outlets we didn't have before, that might reduce the risk of interpersonal interaction, but the tenets are still the same. So please tell people that Butterfly Kisses is out there.
Absolutely. So if Butterfly Kisses was step one, then step two is definitely in the blink of an eye. So let's kind of turn our direction to that. And this is basically a continuation of what we've been talking about. Butterfly Kisses, you know, was a movie. In the blink of the eye is 12 stories. Eric, I want to hear from you about, I know K. Patrick had mentioned it earlier, but what's your take on the 12 stories? And I think, are you responsible for one of them?
I don't want to talk about it too much, mostly because I think that it's K. Patrick's baby. And it's, and partly because there is an association I have that is, I don't want to say it's too close, but it's definitely surreal to me. You know, you create something, and what you create is what you create. It's, you know, it definitely, for any artist, has a closeness that it's never going to have for anyone else, any other recipient, whether they're a reader or a viewer or whatever else. I have never created something that has inspired ancillary product, and I have really never created something that inspired ancillary product from a collaboration of artists who were all putting their own respective spin on my idea. It's weird and it's surreal.
Feel good.
It does feel good. It feels good. It's at the same time, it's bizarre. And I mean that in the very best way, because you sort of realize that, you know, the concept that you conceived and carried and then gave birth to is now its own adult running around and interacting in the world and forming its own relationships. It's a very crazy thing. And I love it. I absolutely love it. And when K-Pat, and I know he hates when I call him K-Pat, when K-Pat came to me and he pitched this idea, I thought, wow, this is awesome. If it actually happens, it's awesome. And when he came back with a list of authors and the authors began turning out, you know, quality product, I mean, it just blew my mind. And it's very hard for me right now to give you an honest assessment of it in general, because it just blows my mind. It really does. It's the most flattering thing that's ever happened to me as an artist, and it inspires me and just makes me want to create more.
So let me just throw it over to K. Patrick then. You know, you approached Eric to get this ball rolling. Why Butterfly Kisses? Why not another movie? Like, what made you pick this particular, this particular movie, this particular story, kind of do what you're doing?
Oh, you're gonna make me say nice things about Eric. That's gonna blow his head up even bigger. I see a lot of films. I see a lot of independent films and small budget films. I've never seen anything quite like Butterfly Kisses. It astonishes me that he was able to write this in a period of a week. The narrative complexity of that story is just utterly fascinating. And I could sit and I guess, you know, do an autopsy on that film for hours. But what it boiled down to was it just leaves so much to the imagination and gives you just enough to make you really want more. And I could see where that more would come from and how it would fit in. And luckily, Eric agreed.
Now, when reaching out to different authors to create stories for this project, how did you go about doing that? Did you have people in mind, or how did that take place?
In a variety of ways. I had a couple people in mind that I had worked with before. Eric had a couple of people that he suggested to me. Seth Adam Kallick, who is the star of Butterfly Kisses, he played Gavin, and is also a novelist. And he contributed one of the stories. Matt Lake, who plays himself in the film, has also written a piece for the book. Will Cooper and Steve Tose are the UK writers that I had worked with before. They're both excellent horror writers. Matter of fact, Steve has got work coming out in the Best Horror of the Year anthology this year. Megan Morgan, who's a fantastic local science fiction novelist, stepped up and did a story for it. We've got a couple of actors that Eric knew who were also storytellers and wanted to be involved. Paul Seiber, who's best known for the Starship Farragut series, And Jacob LeDoux, who is the star of another local independent horror film, Eight Ball Clown, that came out this year, has written a story for it. Am I missing? Joseph Richardson, who has done video game work. He's a filmmaker. He's an artist. He was involved in Butterfly Kisses. He put together a really great story for this. Shelley Davis-Wygand, who I mentioned earlier, is a local historian and folklorist who did the Haunted Ellicott City book. She's done the story that launches it and kind of gives us our sort of pseudo-origin for Tom. And then we also got Patrick Stork, who's a local comic book writer. He's done stuff for Disney Studios, Muppet stuff. This is his first real horror piece, and he knocked it out of the park. It's a fantastic story.
All right. I mean, it sounds like you got a good collection of creative authors who are putting this, or have put all these stories together. That's absolutely fantastic. I guess let's circle back around to the campaign that you currently have running on Kickstarter. Is there anything that you want to tell the audience particulars about the campaign? I know we had mentioned where to go to, but, does this campaign have if you donate so much money, you get something back? Like how does that work?
Yeah, we've got a lot of great rewards. Let me tell you a little about the campaign first. Our campaign was put together by the guy who did the cover art for our book. His name is Ilan Sheedy. He's from the UK, but he lives in Germany, and he's just done a spectacular job, both with the artwork for the book and the visuals for this campaign. It's really impressive-looking stuff. And he helped put together the packages that we're going to be giving away. We've got the paperback copy of the book, of course. There's a limited hardcover edition that's available, both of which are going to be signed by a number of the creators on the book. There are bumper stickers and a custom memory stick that will have digital versions and some other stuff. We have on the site that you can listen to right now is an audio drama of the story that I've written for the book, a piece called In the Court of the Yellow King, which is available for free, and that'll be on, also the MP3 of it will be on the custom memory stick that goes out with the packages.
Okay. All right. They're very cool. And how long does this Kickstarter run for?
Well, it's a 30-day Kickstarter, but we're a little over a week into it. We've got, 19 days to go.
Okay. All right, so there's plenty of time. If you want to, donate towards the Kickstarter campaign, 19 days, it's a lot of time. So, get behind this project, get behind Butterfly Kisses, and get behind In the Blink of an Eye. Most importantly, get behind Peeping Tom and Blink Man, because, this is, this doesn't happen every day, guys.
You're going to love this book.
Yeah, something like this, doesn't, reach out into pop culture that often. A movie is a movie, a book is a book. But, this is a little bit more than that. This is an idea. This is a new mythology that is taking hold, and it has spawned a movie and it has spawned a book. And, if I can give my two cents, I don't think this is the end. I think we're going to see this grow, a third person opinion here, but, I would not be surprised, down the line, if there was another movie. And of course, Eric would know more than I do, but, I'm just saying, there's still a lot to dive into, in my opinion. And, so support this thing now so it can grow.
Yeah, we've got a couple other things planned that I talked to about, Eric, and there's a couple other things out there online already. The sort of Butterfly Kisses Easter eggs, if you will, that are available on YouTube. We'll be linking to them from the from the page sometime this week if users haven't found them already. I'm talking about a TV show called Potluck that kind of furthered the mythology a little bit there.
Okay. All right. Sounds pretty cool. Is there anything that I did not mention about the Kickstarter campaign or about In the Blink of an Eye that you want to mention? Or have we covered that?
I think we got it all covered. Eric?
No, other than the fact that everybody that's involved is, and I'm not saying this to toot anyone's point, you know, I mean, everybody that's involved with this book is tremendously talented. And, you know, some of them are people whose work I've seen before. For others, I'm seeing their writing for the first time. In some cases, they're people who are, you know, on the other side of the world and we've never met. But nonetheless, it's very inspiring, you know, not just for me. And that's the thing I really want to underline here. It's cool that I had an idea and we're doing an offshoot, a spinoff, whatever you want to call it. That's very, very cool. And, you know, if that strokes my ego, wonderful. But I think the really important thing to take away from it is that it is possible for artists who are working, you know, as I said before, with scotch tape and popsicle sticks, just trying to create product out of thin air with limited resources, limited time, and to have it really inspire other people to the point where they are willing to say, I want to build on what you've done. I want to take the concept that you've created and I want to make something else out of it. That's an amazing thing. And, you know, it doesn't start here with me and, you know, the In the Eye book being an offshoot of Butterfly Kisses. Butterfly Kisses is directly a response to the Blair Witch Project. You know, there have been tons of found footage movies that have been made since then, and there were found footage movies that never were popularized the way the Blair Witch Project was. But, you know, there were films like Cannibal Holocaust that predated the Blair Witch Project. But the Blair Witch Project being a Maryland production made by a Maryland filmmaker, by Eduardo Sanchez, that was hugely inspiring to me as a horror movie fan, as a fan of cinema in general, for an entire subgenre, what we now refer to as found footage, for that to come out of, you know, essentially my backyard. And it wasn't something that 20th Century Fox or Paramount or whomever sent a film crew here to Maryland to shoot. This was a backyard production. The Blair Witch Project was, you know, it was an independent film in the truest sense of the word. There are all sorts of buzzwords I've just hit there that, you know, clearly, you know, inspire me as an artist, as a filmmaker, and directly informed Butterfly Kisses. Butterfly Kisses is a response to found footage, but uses the Blair Witch Project as the paradigm. And so, you know, the work of independent filmmakers in 1999 inspired the work that I produced, that was released in 2018, and that is now producing this book and anything else that comes out of it. It's an amazing thing to see what artists can do for the sake of art.
No, I mean, I absolutely agree. You know, inspiration comes in many strange places, and you know, you can be inspired by anything. And you're right, the Blair Witch Project, I remember sitting in the theater watching it for the first time and just being, you know, on the edge of my seat. And, you know, I'm watching what seemingly was just, you know, something happening for real, people holding a camcorder, you know, I mean, that's what it seemed like, and that's what it was supposed to seem like. And, you know, here it sparked, 20 years now of, countless found footage movies. You know, some great, some not so great, but that's not the point. The point is, you know, it inspired people to make movies. And Butterfly Kisses, you know, is one of the better ones, in my opinion. And I've seen a lot of movies.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's, you know, again,
so,
it's all can be, you know, traced back to that which inspired it and that which inspired that. It's, you know, no one can claim credit to having ever created an idea. It's all, you know, a mishmash of other elements that have just been reproduced in new form. And it's cool, you know, what I did was a response to something else, that somebody was responding to something else that responded to something else. And, you know, this book is showing off my film. It's cool. I can't wait to see where it goes.
All right, guys. Well, I mean, I think we, you know, I think we had a great conversation tonight. We talked about Butterfly Kisses and In the Blink of an Eye. And everything that it's about and everything that, you know, inspired it. And this is going to be inspiring people. It's obviously inspiring people, you know, to continue the story of Blink Man. And, you know, the controversy rages on, in my opinion. Is Blink Man real? Or was it created by Eric? I don't know. But listen, guys, you know, any final words before we sign off?
I leave that to K-Pat.
Please go to Kickstarter, look up In the Blink of an Eye, Take Two, and order yourself a copy of this amazing book. Help support independent books, along with independent film, and all these great writers that we've got working on the project.
Exactly.
All
Kickstarter.com. Kickstarter.com/projects/Roxton Press/In the Blink of an Eye Take Two. Everything he just said. Support independent arts that are supporting independent arts that are supporting independent arts.
And we'll have links to all this stuff as well. Thanks, guys. It's been a fabulous night. Again, you know, support independence, support In the Blink of an Eye, and support Butterfly Kisses. Thanks, guys, and good night.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you. Good night.